Hello everybody, my name is Ken Allen, and you're very welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This is the Community News Roundup section, where we look back at all the shows that have happened in the last month, and we discuss them at length, marking you on various different aspects. The audio quality, your ability to communicate your message, the quality of your show notes, and various other topics. Joining me this evening, from top to bottom, is Ahuka.
Hello!
Mr. Dave Morris.
You really are sick if you're going to judge everything.
Apologies. Phone call.
Kevin Wisher, who is also a hookah.
Huh? Okay.
Kevin?
Kevin Wisher is?
No, Kevin Wisher isn't a hookah. Now I'm being confused. Kevin, are you around? No. And Mr. Pokey.
Ahoy, hoy.
So, as always, we have the traditional butchering of the new host's names, which I will not do this week.
So we have a couple of new hosts to welcome. The first one is Gabriel Evenfire, and the second one is James Michael DuPont, and we are very happy to have both of them Hacker Public Radio family.
Indeed we are. Indeed we are. So, as I said earlier, before we go on, I actually want to make a public service announcement.
Okay.
And
should we do the thing? Thing? Is it like an emergency service announcement, or is it more like a do 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 do?
I have no idea what you're talking about, as I come from a country that is far away from that sort of thing. An explanation is required.
Pokey's free associating.
Does free associating mean like a little crazy?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. Right on.
Okay, well, I started it anyway. Is that like the tune when there's a public service announcement comes on the TV or something?
Yeah, they used to do... It might have only been one station that did it, or it might have been all of them, I don't know, but there was a lot of it when I was a kid. They would do these, like, the more you know things, and they would tell you, like, how not to get in trouble with drug dealers or why you should be good to your brother and sister or something, and it would always... You know, they would go, the more you know, and then the music would go, do, 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 and you could kind of almost hear them singing the more you know, but they never did.
Oh, okay, interesting. Maybe somebody should do a show on that.
And then the other, it's not even that interesting, and then the other thing was the tone that they play when they're interrupting your show to tell you there's like a weather catastrophe on its way.
Ah, okay. They have this thing here, but maybe the first of the month, they test the nationwide alert system. And the first time I heard that, I fucked myself like a banana.
Oh, why? Is it new?
No, I moved to the Netherlands, so obviously nobody, like, on your way in, it goes, hello, sorry, you come to the Netherlands for the first time. Remember, 5 minutes past 12, on the first Monday of the month, we set off this siren everywhere without any explanation, and people continue operating as like they don't hear it. Yeah? Heads up.
Oh, is like a PA system?
It's like, you know, the air raid, the air attack warnings, you and your family should shelter immediately. That test system.
Like a for real, like mechanically spinning device that makes an alarm.
No, I'll add the sound to the end of this episode so you know what it sounds like. It is, and it's ugly, fierce, horrible. Actually, I need to cover that as well. But it's this weird air raid siren-y type disaster, you know. Something's gone wrong, and you're supposed to go home, shut the windows, and turn on the radio and listen to the news.
Woo!
but they tested. There was a whole period there after the Cold War ended where they didn't, and then when the War on Terror started again, they started up, and now they test it every month, at the beginning of the month.
That's crazy. The thing we have just comes over the TV and the radio station. They used to call it the emergency broadcast system, and when they switch it on, it can kind of interrupt all of the over-the-air broadcasts and all of the cable broadcasts. They, like all the everybody with a license to transmit in any way has, you know, this thing hooked up on their input side, and when the emergency broadcast system people throw the switch, it kind of takes over all the stations, and it's on every station everywhere at the same time, and they have this like alert sound that they play so you know to pay attention. But they changed the name of it. I forget what when they changed the system, they changed the name as if, you know, people on the end care, you know, what the name is, but they did change it. And we should welcome Lander, who just joined the room.
Hi, guys.
So we're just going up. You're just about to start going through the shows. If that's... Oh, no, I was making a special public service announcement. Thank you, Pokey, for leading us down this. Remember, I wanted to keep this short because I wasn't feeling that well. Anyways, I just want to reiterate the audio manifesto. Now, a lot of people are getting excited about professional audio quality recordings, and that's all well and good, and I'm all in favor of that. Nary a problem here. However, here at HPR, we have one rule, and that is content is king. Audio quality doesn't really matter. We do appreciate good audio quality like everybody else, but we will never, ever have, and we never, ever will turn anyone away for having bad audio quality. Even Darth Vader, who refuses to go push to talk, is allowed on HPR. So let us be clear. If you're listening to Door to Door Geeks show on improving audio quality, please listen to it. Please take notes. But remember that if you want to practice, Hacker Public Radio is a good place to start. Yeah. Just make that clear right here and now.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's even ever commented on somebody else's show quality that I can remember. People often ask, what did you guys think and how can I improve it? But I don't think anybody's ever said, oh boy, that was terrible, and you know, step it up a notch. I've never heard that from anyone.
No, and that is the founding. If you go back way, way, way back, it is the whole purpose of Hacker Public Radio as a concept is to get people into podcasting. And there is a learning curve involved in any of this. Each of us podcasts in a different way, and there's a learning curve to get yourself in the zone. There's been a few times where I've put on, in fact, last month, I had my audio settings set incorrectly, and I sounded very, very bad, and people kind of offered very helpful suggestions on how to improve that. And so I think any criticism that you get will be constructive criticism or will be help. But we will never, ever, ever refuse a show. Content is more important. And even if you're doing a topic about widgets, and the only person who can, if the topic is interesting enough for the person, they will listen to it. They will listen to your show. Yeah, just make that clear.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement there.
Okay, let's run down through the shows. Starting at the first show of the month, which was done by J. Rob, What's in My Bag? And he went through his bag, what appeared to be half his medical case as well. So that was a very nice show. I like this series.
I'm going to repeat what I said last month, which at some point I'd like to hear someone discuss what's the best bag.
True for you, yeah.
Oh, we just got that. That was that last month's show?
Mr. Gilbert's.
Yeah, where he talked about the bag that he bought with the Molly attachments and all that. That was a really good show, too. I don't remember J. Rob's show. I know I heard it, but there were there was a bunch of them all at once that came in of What Is In My Bags, and they were all really cool. But I don't remember specifically which one was which at this point.
Then the following day, we had Frank Bell, who baked a cake. And
he baked bread.
Baked bread. And I'm all into that. I saved that one in my MP3 player. I moved it into my Save This Show folder.
Did anyone find that annoying that you couldn't at the end, like you just wanted to taste that bread. You
know? No, I could taste it. My wife and I buy a lot of like artisanal bread, so I kind of had it in mind what was going on there. It was great, and I'm definitely going to try to make some bread the way he said. I loved his tip about knowing when the dough is dry enough.
That was good, all right, yeah. This is one of the ones that I forced my wife to listen to, so.
It's all about maker culture, right? So, not supposed to be tasting his bread, you're supposed to be making your own.
Yeah. But that and all, you know, it's like, you know, here I'm doing the bread, and here's the photos that went along with it, and then, geez, you know.
He has to bring some to a Linux Fest.
Yes, he does. mail it over to me.
We keep cutting off Lane Deer. Sorry, man.
No, that's fine. I'll definitely admit to some jealousy. I used to bake a lot in college and have not had as much time to do so anymore.
And he did mention that, the amount of time that it takes. I suppose you could, as my wife was considering baking the bread for the family, but you really need to get into a routine, do this in the morning and then leave it overnight and do that. It's a lot of work.
It was a good tip about the time there. I knew there was something about time and it had to do with proofing the bread and all that, but I'm glad he kind of spelled that out a little better.
Okay, moving on to the next day, taking us from one end of the spectrum here in HPR to the other, we had Sigflop with a hacker's perspective on schizophrenia. And after hearing this show, I created a mental health series here on HPR where I put this and some other of her shows and the one that we recorded, the interview Dave and I recorded last month as well.
That's good. I just couldn't stop listening to it. Fascinating.
Yeah, this one was a real eye-opener for me. Just love some of Sigflop's earlier podcasts about lexers and parsers and compilers and so forth. And, you know, this really, how the level of technical detail she went into on this and as well as her own experience, just fabulous.
I love her shows. I love the content. And at the same time, I'm always frustrated by by the lack of knowledge that the human race has on these topics, that we haven't, you know, figured these things out yet, and we should be the point to where we're solving them, it always feels like.
Yeah, I think my point on that is schizophrenia sucks. I was, prior to this episode, or prior to the series, actually, your only experience of schizophrenia is, you know, Hollywood version of it, and this is really, especially the artwork as well. I don't know if you haven't had a chance to go and see the artwork for this, you really should. She's, turns out, not only can she compile while she's taking a Raspberry Pi apart and making a humor interactive compiler, she is also a very, very, very good artist. She sent me some more of her work as well, and it is, I think, brilliant is the only word I can use to describe it.
I'd like to hear what she thinks about that old Kinks song, because I think it, you know, it's like the dark humor thing where it kind of gives you a little bit of relief. I don't know.
Okay, let's move on. I would love to, again, say every time I hear this, I just want to give her a big hug. I don't know if that helps, but that's life, I'm afraid.
Yeah, same here. We're all pulling for you, Sigflop.
The following day, we had Talk Geek to Me Nukes cast for 2013-1308. Dave, why didn't you pick this one up? Yeah, the quality control has gone out the window here in Hacker Public Radio.
What? I must have been asleep. What happened?
Here's a little secret.
We got an extra month.
Yes, that too.
We had a record number of shows this year.
All right, the Talk Geek to Me newscast, the date is 2013-13-08. And as we all know, there are 12 months in the year, or at least the people in
you
the
and your fancy Gregorian calendars.
No, I renumber all the dates to ISO 8601 because there is only one date format, and that is ISO 8601. And the sooner we all start using it, the better. You can keep your Fahrenheit, that's fine. Let's switch the feckin' date system.
Since you mentioned that, I have picked that up, and I've been using that in real life. I do it 100% of the time, and I think it annoys the hell out of people at the doctor's office and people I write checks to, but I'm still doing it.
Because it only takes 2 minutes. It took me about 2 weeks to do it, and then you get over it, and then use it everywhere, and then people go, why did you write the date this way? Because it's confusing. 0707. What is that? Okay, I'll move on. Anyway, that was Deep Geek and Dan Washko, and at the end of this, I have some very sad news about Talk Geek to Me newscast as well. Okay, moving on, we had Gar Jola with Programming Languages number 3C, and he assured me that at the end of this, I would be able to code into the Linux kernel. Actually, no, he warned me that he wouldn't, but this was actually nice, because in college, I got dumped for here's some C programming, assuming that everybody knew how to code, and this was just a very nice introduction into a little bit of basic C.
I liked how it went into the concepts behind C a little bit, and you know, the advantages and disadvantages, and some of it I knew, but some of it was more of an epiphany, so it was pretty good.
My only comment, I thought this was really great, but one of the things I find that I do not know, because I never did computer science, I'm a biologist, is that things like, what's the difference between functional programming and procedural programming? It'd be great if somebody was to explain stuff like this. Sure, you can find it in Wikipedia, but I'd like somebody who really understands it to explain it to me.
Can you email me that as a short topic in case I forget?
Yeah, sure.
I just say C as one of my favorite languages, and I really enjoyed this episode, and just this series, the show notes have been so thorough. I've really enjoyed that.
This is another one that I want to make into a series, Programming Languages, and kind of also want to bring up the point, when does a series become a series? It is when it becomes a series. I think it's like, well, how do you know it's porn when it's porn? I'll know it when I see it. But usually the general rule of thumb is if somebody does three things, or there's a story arc to it, or there's a start, middle, and end to it. So some things are obviously series and some things are not.
What about when someone starts a show just by saying, I'd like to propose this as a series, because that's what I did, hoping other people would jump on with it.
Yeah, that's fine. And then when three episodes come together and it looks like there's going to be more material, then we'll make a series. But otherwise, don't think that you won't. We have the hashtag field, so if you want to group something like how I got into Linux, then you know we should be able to search in those, and then at a certain point put them into a series.
I was just thinking in the template for the text file, there's a space for the series, so it's whenever you put something in that on that line.
Yeah, that line can be the, if there exists a series, then put it in there, or if your topic's all about something, procedural programming, and then put your topic's about Pascal compiler, but you want to add it to the networking series, then you put it into the networking series, comma, some other series. I don't know. It's kind of vague yet. It'll usually, if somebody emails me asking any chance of gathering these, all those series together, shows together about blah, and we'll put it into a series. But there are so many series now, right now in the database, that the term series has kind of lost its meaning. If there's only two shows in a series, then it's not a series. It's a show that has got two hashtags. You know, I'm thinking more of switching to hashtags and keeping the term series for something that is actually a series. The following day, we had 1331, A Tale of Chirrut. A Tale of Chirrut. I can't help but think he was trying to be funny there, NY Bill, because NY Bill's a funny guy. Sorry, that came out wrong. Sorry, NY Bill. But this was I felt his pain. I felt his pain so much.
I was so happy that this had a happy ending. I was really thrilled that he was able to restore and save this.
It's just with all that, you just keep beating yourself against the wall, overcoming one hurdle, and then going on to the next one. But it also tells you folks why you should be using an encrypted disk. I mean, it wouldn't have helped him. I'm sure he's glad he isn't using an encrypted disk. But anybody can get, if you're not encrypting your disk, full disk encryption, anybody can get onto your machine and change the root password and they have complete access to your machine. And it does not slow down performance. And yes, I know, I promised to do an episode on that as well. Okay, the next day we had Stitch calling in some jingles, and we met up with Stitch during the OHM 2013 thing, and he graciously allowed us to set up a booth on a Rainbow Island, and because it was absolutely boiling and they had some shade there, so that was really kind of cool. So this is the sort of thing that you could clip into a as an interstitial if you wanted to do that in between your shows.
I didn't know these were going to get put out as a show, and I had been cutting them up and stitching them back together for intros on my own shows. In fact, I put them in the beginning of one that I haven't uploaded yet. I'm still editing.
Well, that's the whole point. You send me something, it goes out as a show. And then we had Geek Dad with the introduction to how I got into Linux, and I love his handle, Geek Dad. That is so cool.
Topic that never grows old.
No, it doesn't. But I'm actually surprised at how many Americans come through the Mac, the whole Mac thing. The Mac was definitely not as popular over here in Europe. Or am I wrong, Dave?
I never saw many of them of the sort he's talking about, personally. We had consultants years ago who used to lug those in a huge, great big backpack. Can you imagine lugging a... You know the Mac he was talking about? What was it?
The Mac 2. There's a picture on
Mac
the Mac
2. Yeah. I remember a guy had a backpack that you could stick that in. It looked vast. But but I never saw many of them. We didn't have them in the university I worked at.
My impression is that Apple is really big in the United States and much less so almost everywhere. Being out with the iPhone.
Back in the old days, in the 80s and early 90s, before it was Mac, actually, back when it was just Apple, we had a lot of them in schools. We would have a computer lab in a elementary school might have five or six Apple IIs or Apple IIe's or some, maybe an Apple IIe, among five or six Apple IIs, and then you might have one machine running DOS over in the corner. And then, later when Windows came in, you might have a Windows 3.1 machine somewhere, and then, people kind of seemed to migrate over to that. But it was always a thing back then where it was like people who used computers to do things and to get things done seemed to use Macs for that, or Apples for that, or some of the early Macs. And then, like, people who just wanted to do what the computer told them to do, you'd see Windows 3.1, and then, later on Windows 95 came in, and it was just, more of that kind of thing. People who knew what they were doing, or who came from Unix maybe, would be on the Mac. So it was always a smaller market share, but more hardcore fans of it. Kind of what Linux is today. It makes perfect sense to me that people would go from Apple machines to Linux, and skip right over OS X, that kind of thing.
Yep. In my experience with the Apple II, there was one of them in the computer room. And I remember it wouldn't give me out a floppy disk because you had to press that eject thing and it just wouldn't give it out. And that annoyed me.
I remember being in a computer class in probably like fifth grade or sixth grade, and it was the first time I'd ever really been able to get my hands on a computer, our introduction to it, the teacher said computers can do three things: they can do word processing, they can do spreadsheets, and they can do graphs, and that's it. Other than that, it's just there's games, but we're not going to talk about that here. But these are the three useful things that computers can do, or databases, I'm sorry, which was you could make graphs out of spreadsheets. Sorry, databases, spreadsheets, and word processors were the three useful things, and that stuck with me for years. I had it. That was like a crutch or a roadblock that I had to get around.
Microsoft made a pretty big business on that premise, actually.
Yeah, well, so did Apple. We used to turn on those Apple IIe's, and we'd run word processing program where you had to put in all your own tags for italics and underline and that kind of thing. And a database was just a table of relational thing. You know, it was like you pull up a page and put in your own fields and fill them in one entry per field. It was really, really simple stuff and quick too, fast as hell. And, you know, and then you could make a spreadsheet if you had some math to do.
Okay. 1334, open source mental illness with Ed Finkler. I actually should have put this down under your name, Dave. I think.
Well, I don't think so. No, it's fine.
Yes, Ed was, yeah, essentially, he's also, this episode is also under the mental illness section series.
This guy, I liked this show, and he kind of answered a question. When I did the show about campfires and, you know, said how that related to my social awkwardness, I heard a lot of people say, boy, I didn't think he'd be a guy who would feel awkward in a social situation. But it's exactly like this guy put it. When I'm with people who I know and who I know are like-minded, then I'm fairly open and outgoing. But when I'm with a bunch of strangers, I don't know those people, or I feel somehow that they may, disapprove of, you know, my lifestyle choices or whatever, I get kind of introverted. And this guy kind of mentioned that, and how if you have something to do or something that you know about that you feel like you can, you know, offer to the group and be appreciated for, then it's a little easier to be outgoing. But when you don't have a very firm feeling like you can contribute, that's when the introversion happens.
Well, Pokey, you got to give them a little bit on that, because deciding to be a barbecue master is just a weird one.
That's fine. I didn't decide it. It's just one thing I discovered that I can do.
We very much enjoyed that show we talked about last
time. Yeah, yes. I got that. People seem to like it more than I expected anyone to, but that's, you know, I wasn't bringing it up to discuss that. I just, this guy did a better job of explaining my position than I did, is all I was saying.
Yeah.
Cool. The following day, we had LibreOffice 11 Writer Character Styles by Ahuka. Ahuka, I'm running out of you these series. Only one more left to be posted. Yeah, there's three already in the queue, and there's one about to appear next week.
Oh, okay.
Ahuka, you're getting quieter and quieter.
All right, is this any better?
Yes, sir.
Whoa.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I had enough to go through, like, the end of November.
Yeah, that's about right. There's 3 weeks of a forecast out on the queue.
Right. So I'm actually starting writing this weekend, and... So yeah, there's more shows coming. You're never gonna run dry.
And anybody who wants more LibreOffice shows should pray for snowy weather in Mid America.
Well, it's not snowy, but you know, for the last few weeks, I've just been feeling kind of itchy about I haven't done anything on this for a while, and I need to get going again. So, and I made a few personal changes in my lifestyle. One of which is I have stepped down from Ohio Linux Fest.
Oh,
yeah. Just it was time, and you know, that was taking up a lot of my energy and attention. And I've decided that there's other things I'd really rather be doing, and one of them is to get more into the LibreOffice stuff, and maybe even get involved with the documentation team for LibreOffice.
Yeah, I heard you mentioning that. I think you'll be sorely missed. And thanks very much for all your work.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, it was a lot of fun. I did it for, you know, 3 years. And, you know, let someone else have the fun now. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting in there. And not just LibreOffice, but I've got another, I'm going to kick off another series that I hope other people will jump in and join me on as well, which... I think would be interesting.
Cool.
And by the way, and I've said this before, but I can't go back to Ohio. But if I could, I would have gone to Ohio Linux Fest, and I would have gone to the pajama party.
But then you would have been one of two people.
Exactly. I would have been the other guy.
Yeah, that's right. Kevin Oddie was the other one. And boy, did we take a ton of grief over that.
I think you should be applauded for at least trying it.
Yeah, I do too. I really do, and I'm dead serious when I say I would have been there.
Yeah.
Why can't you go back there? Sounds like Yeah, can't go back to that county. Sheriff's got a ticket on my head.
A warrant out.
Yeah, I lived in Ohio for 2 years, and I just I've had my fill. When I left, I swore it off. I wasn't going back. I'll drive around it if I have to get to the other side of it. I just can't.
Well, I may catch up with you at NELF one of these days. I'm actually from Massachusetts originally, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that would be awesome to catch up. Yeah, I lived in one of the less, a place you wouldn't want to live. You know, I'm sure all of Ohio is not like the place I lived, but the people I met there just did not give me a good impression.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cool.
That Lima was the name of the city, by the way. Lima, Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah, up in the northwest.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't go there. Anyway.
I'm in Ann Arbor area, so I'm just north of that.
And if you're from Lima, Ohio, and you want to send in your own episode to HPR, you can do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and feel free to tell me off. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Right.
Anyway, Rosetta Dream.
Yeah, thank you very much. This I liked. I did like this.
Okay, help me out with this one, because I didn't dislike it, but I kind of felt like somebody turned two pages at once on me. Like, I didn't... Like, is this... Was he getting at, like, transhumanism? Is that what this was about?
What's transhumanism?
Oh, like, the next step of evolution, including computers and technology.
Like, uploading your brain into the cloud so that you live forever.
Yeah, or at least implanting some sort of...
God, you guys,
electronic devices.
Looking too deeply into this. By the way, book review. Shut up discussing books until you do the book review back. Thank you very much, number pokey.
Yeah, all right, well,
and it's a
then
good
we
story.
Should do it. I don't
Go
know what
with
to
the
it.
Flow. It was a good story. I liked it.
No, it was well written. It was a good story, yes. It seemed like it was supposed to be, like, directing me to something that I should go learn about, but not really explaining what or why I should.
See, that's not the impression I got of it at all. To me, Pokey, I think it was sort of suggested that that's how this society got to that point, but I think more it was just sort of the irony that this super advanced civilization that we think we have now to basically only looks advanced to us because we're in it.
Okay.
Seems like a massive, big extrapolation, and he also made reference to our predecessors who had no language at all. At least I think he did, didn't he? I'm not sure whether I made that up in my own head, but
yeah, Dave, I picked up on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was a great idea. I wasn't sure I would necessarily agree with that extrapolation, but it's a perfectly valid one to offer to us. I thought it was really well done. I liked his reading style, actually. I thought his style was brilliant. I could listen to him a lot. He had just a sort of listenable to style to appeal to me.
And he's got links to all the sound effects that he used. Nice and subtle.
Hey, Ken, by the way, I think that Julian was our second new podcaster this month.
That's correct.
You didn't mention him up front.
Yeah, we had him in from last month's show, which hasn't been released this month.
Okay.
I think the way it works is that when Ken gets a show in and schedules it, it goes up on the new hosts, even if it might be next month before it actually broadcasts.
Correct.
I didn't spot that.
Or whatever it is we do.
Dave, you're dropping the ball on this whole
thing. I'm constantly looking for holes here, Ken, and I'm missing them. What's going on? Must be getting old.
No, I'm just hiding them better. Text to that story is up there. And I just enjoyed the show, and I enjoyed the feeling that it gets. Actually, I didn't. I enjoyed the insignificance that it just left me at the end of it. But anyway, I'm not cultured like you folk.
Well, I did like it. I didn't mean to imply that I didn't like it. I thought the story, it left me feeling very tranquil and at ease with the world, I will say that.
You know what we need to, on your book review thing, which you need to start up again, is Lost in Bronx's new series.
Oh, yeah, I know. I need some help with the book club. I keep asking people if they want to do it, and they go, Well, maybe, yeah. Like, no one will commit. I can't do it alone, so I need...
How about you, if this slot, an hour before this slot is available, then we should do it then, every month.
Oh, maybe. Saturdays have been terrible for me. Get back to you on Saturdays. I don't know, we can talk about it after this show, if you like.
And then, episode number 1337, Leet went to Sigflop Overdrive purely by accident, and... This
and completely appropriate.
On so many levels. We just could not have picked this better. Of course, I've been planning it for months.
This thing was so cool. I saw it come in, being posted, and she had mentioned it, and I had really, really meant to load up an emulator and try this thing out myself before the show came out, but I just never got around to it. I've been just so busy, which is always my excuse. But the show was great. The demo was great. The music, I still really need to watch it because I guess the visuals are as impressive as the music. But the music was completely fun to listen to, totally great. And this thing was done completely electronically, completely with 16-bit audio. And this shows you why so many people don't like electronic music, because these guys worked so hard and made this thing so well, but then so much of the electronic music that you hear that gets popular just sounds like nobody put any effort or artistic creation into it all. This thing was a 10 out of 10.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely brilliant. She's got a full transcript up there, and there's links to a demo in the show notes. So if you're not been using the show notes, you should do that. Have a look.
Yeah, and the interview was top-notch as well. It was fantastic.
I think we got Sigflop on a good day there. Okay, and I'd like to thank the following day and my build for being smarter than I am and leaving a gap in the 1338. So yeah, he had specified 1338, and of course, dim-witted me never realized that he was jumping over the 1337. But I think you're lead 2, then, my bro.
Nice.
Pump.io server sounds like an awful lot of work to me. I'm actually interested to know how this, you know, there was Identica, and that seemed like the place where the free software advocates were kind of going to, and then that just exploded into this Pump.io thing, and everybody's got their own pods, and you still have Identica is still running, and then you've got Diaspora. It all seems very odd and fragmented right now.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Noki.
No, you guys go first. I'm a mic hog.
Well, I was just gonna say that I definitely think Pump.io seems like a step in the right direction. It seems to me much less of a particular implementation and much more about the very interoperable way of getting these messages across, the very simple nature of the protocol, the push and the post, and just the JSON encoding of the messages.
I'd have to say that I really don't quite understand it. I used to be on Identica, and then one day there wasn't anything on Identica, and am I supposed to point at a new server or what? And I just finally stopped trying to use it.
Yeah, I guess we have to look for Bradley, wherever Bradley is. That's the next big thing.
I jumped on Identica / Laconica real late, and I got onto micro.fragdev.com. I think is the server I'm on that now I forget who runs that. My brain just stalled on me. I missed a shift. Sorry, guys. Anyway, I jumped on there kind of late, and I'm going to stay there as long as that server's up, and you're going to have to drag me away kicking and screaming, because it's just the right amount of social networking for me. You turn it on when you want to see what's going on with the people you're following, and you turn it off when you're too busy to do that kind of stuff, or when you got to go to work, and you post up when you like and what you like, and it just kind of keeps track of everything, and it's just the right amount. So I'm staying there for a while, I think.
I'm more inclined.
Sorry, Ken.
No, sorry.
I was just going to say, definitely nice to find a sweet spot like that. And I do like the idea of these federated protocols, the PumpIO, the Identica, the StatusNet, Diaspora. But I think there's just going to be this, for a while yet, this impedance match between, you know, the people who want to get down and dirty with the software and, you know, set up their own instance, and the people who just want a service that they can sign on to and you know, talk to their friends.
I'm sometimes thinking it's all getting too complicated. You just go onto IRC, and if I could figure out how logging was done, then I could go back and see all the posts. IRC, all the people I want to talk to over there are in Oddcast Planet, and if they're looking for me, they'll get me in Oddcast Planet.
I'm pretty much Google Plus.
Nope.
Every day, most of the day.
And it's Jezra's server, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, moving on.
We've heard Jezra on here. Sorry.
Yes. Some episodes on that whole topic will be appreciated, actually, how people think it's going to go and explanations of whatever and why I hate Google Plus.
Yeah. Okay, episode 1339, Legacy Technology, John Culp's Victrola. This was great. This was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, I had a chance to write to John and tell him how much I liked that.
I wrote to John quite a few times about this episode, yes.
Yeah, this was wonderful, and especially his incorporation of music into it was really a great way to share that Victrola with us.
I had two, at one point in my life, I had two milk cartons full of Victrola-style phonographs, and I brought them in. I had no use for them and no tremendous interest in them, and I brought them in to be appraised to see what I could get for him, and I never heard back from the guy, and it just kind of disappeared. So they're just gone, which was really kind of annoying. But it was, I remembered them all and realized only after hearing this episode kind of what a treasure had been lost in losing these things, because it was probably 40 or 50 of these I know they're not records, but maybe phonographs is the right word for them, whatever it is. They were pre-vinyl for sure, and there were a couple with chipped edges that were kind of broken, and the material...
Yeah, shellac was what they were using.
See, I thought it was some kind of a creosote derivative, because it looked like the crap you break out of your chimney if it gets all black. When it was broken, it was very porous and creosote-like.
Yeah, interestingly, with those 78s, about 78 RPM... you can't fit that much on a single disc because it's spinning so fast. So to get a collection of music, you would have 3, 4, 5 discs that would be put together in kind of like a binder, and that's where the word album comes from. Album meant that collection of discs that was constituted a package of music. And then when they went to 33s...
We're all just in awe of the... just the sheer trivia, we've just been blown away.
I am, yes, too.
I am, too.
Or maybe I've just been disconnected.
No, I think it's cool. I always love to hear where words or phrases comes from. I could listen to that all day.
Nope, he did disconnect. He meant that.
Oh, okay.
That's why he interrupted a hookah, because everything must have gone silent on him, and he thought we were all not listening.
Are you back?
Looks like Lane Deer is back.
Oh, yep, I am back.
Hey, welcome back. Glad to have you.
Thanks.
We heard what you said, and we all agreed with it, but Ahuka was just starting to say something else, and you he must have cut out on you when you started talking, because Ahuka was just starting to say something about 33s.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Just when 33s came out, instead of having multiple discs, you could get the same amount of music onto one disc, but they kept the name album.
Very so
instead
cool.
Instead of an album being 3, 4, 5, 6 discs, an album was now one disc, but that was how the word got in there.
That's awesome.
If anyone does want to do something on, you know, commonly used words and their origin of commonly used words, I for one, would be interested in that.
I think that would be fascinating.
An etymology series.
If that's the word, yes.
Yeah, etymology is the root of words, and it's I always have fun with etymology too. That might be something cool to do, like sticking at the end of a show or something, you know, not doing a separate show on it, but if you just had a short one, that's an idea. I might start doing that.
If you could send me a link to however you spell etymology, then I will put it in a requested topic show notes. Thank you.
Good It's ETY. Oh, Lane Deer just posted it.
Thank you. That would be an email.
ETYOLOGY.
That would be an email with us.
As opposed to entomology, which is the study of insects.
Or entomology, which is the study of those cookies.
Or eschatology, which is the study of the end times.
Right.
God, as I drag myself out of my cave here, seriously feel uneducated in this this environment. Anyway, out and about as OHM 2013, that was really, really hot.
That show was awesome, Ken. That was one of my favorite shows this month. I love the Here I Am at the Linux Fest show, or at the festival shows. I love them. Just great.
Yeah, I think those are always a favorite of mine, too. They just give you a nice overall flavor of the atmosphere at the different fests.
Did I mention it was hot? I had completely forgotten how many people I had interviewed. I was just falling over the place with heat.
Stop snapping your mouse pad when you're keyed up.
Me?
I thought it was you. I don't know. I have a habit of doing that, and it always comes off and sounds just like that.
Don't have a mouse pad. Okay, Deep Geek and Pokey doing the Talk Geek to Me newscast. Then we had Power Tool Drag Racing by Mr. Gadgets.
Yep.
Wow.
Wicked cool show. I loved that one. I didn't know people raced all variants of Power Tools. I thought it was just belt sanders.
Well, the only thing I was thinking was, God, Americans. What will they think of next?
Well, you're both right.
It sounds perfectly normal to me to drag race Power Tools, yes. I thought you only did it with belt sanders.
Yeah, that's what I had seen previously. I think they showed it on an episode of This Old House where they did belt sander races. But some of these things, racing a circular saw, that sounds like a pretty tricky proposition. I'm not sure I'd want to be in the area for that.
That's the one that got me. That was crazy. And I'm just thinking, if I was going to race anything at all, why not a router? Those things spin at like 40,000 RPMs. They're at least 10 times faster than all these other tools.
Have you seen how close the people are to this racetrack?
Not close enough, Ken. You want to be right on top of that action.
They're right on top of it there. When I was hearing them, you know, the people were, it started disintegrating the wood and people were kind of at a safe distance back. But they're only like not even 2 meters away from the track.
They had to flick wood chips out of their eyes.
Oh my God. Anyway, enough about that. Casey,
wait a minute, Ken. Where else would they stand? We learned how to watch races watching you guys watch rallies.
That's different. I mean, that's perfectly safe. If you're not in the middle of the road, how are you going to get a good camera shot?
Yeah, all right. Well, don't throw stones in your glass house. Yeah, that's true, all I'm saying.
True for you. True. Yeah, but how did he die, Mrs. Fallon? Yeah, the way he wanted to. Hit by a belt sander at a power track. Oh, okay. Meanwhile, back at the point. Yes, excellent show. Mr. Gadget's One Take Wonder. Amazing guy that can do that. Fantastic, fantastic work. The following day, Too Clever for Your Own Good. And, oh, he was right. It was you.
Yes, it was me.
Oh, fantastic. God, you have nothing to do.
Boy, is that ever true.
Oh, seriously. I'm like well impressed by this. I really am. Okay.
Wait, refresh my memory, because
no,
why am I...
You're going to... Okay, you remember the show 1216, which was on the 1st of April?
Oh, yes, this one was fantastic. I'm sorry. Yes, this was decoding your Morse code, which I was really having trouble figuring out how I was going to do it. I had that one also in my saved folder, trying to figure out how I was going to decode it. Yes, this was awesome. I loved it. Bravo.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Fantastic. Actually, not only fantastic from that point of view, but you also introduced me to a whole go of new tools.
Well, great. I'm glad to hear it.
I regarded it as sort of the coding equivalent of a Rube Goldberg device.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Definitely something like that, all those different moving parts. I did revisit this a while later and just write up a version in C to just deal directly with the raw audio, which was a lot simpler and more performant, but it didn't give me that whole visual, tangible view into what was really going on in the file.
Right.
And who doesn't love a Rube Goldberg machine?
No one.
Oh, it's no. The ultimate hacking. You know, it's like, let's analyze audio with a text editor.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, you need to do a series on awk, by the way. And Dave Morris is already down for a series on SED, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh, yeah. I need that one on
we
SED.
We need them both.
And those I really need the one on SED. Those will instantaneously get a series, by the way.
I had to write a SED script recently, and I didn't know how to put two or more commands in the same line. So I have it doing several lines and writing out to several files, and it's a complete wrong way to do it and terrible. So I can't wait to hear that one done correctly.
I use awk every day, but it never twigged with me that it was an actual programming language you could put on a command. I always use it on a command line. It never twigged with me like that it was fully Turing complete.
Oh, it's one of my favorites for just quick one-off prototypes. It has almost as much of the nice dynamic stuff as, say, JavaScript, where it's all the arrays have string keys instead of integer keys, and it's just really nice to be able to whip stuff up quickly.
So when you wrote all this to decode the Morse code, did you is this all in like one script that just you hit the button and it runs and you can watch it verbosely output all these things, or these different steps you're doing manually?
Well, when I originally built it, this was very kind of an iterative thing where I had to get just to the next step. The SED command particularly got me to the point where I could actually open the thing up in less and scroll through and see, okay, there's silence, there's some sound, that's a dot, that's a dash. And that gave me, I was actually physically counting the lines to sort of tune the awk script that came next.
I'd see, I would love to see like a video output of this, you know, up on YouTube or something, and you know, we could link it back to your show notes, because it would be great fun to watch this happen verbosely in real time.
It's kind of a neat idea, but yeah.
I actually did the various different steps myself to see what you were on about. I should upload.
I did exactly the same thing.
We need to actually link them in the show notes.
You had no idea that show was going to create so many nerdgasms, did you?
No, my wife's laughing at us now. She's sitting here next to me.
she thought you were just wasting your time, and all of us. It's like the greatest thing we've seen this month.
Nerd cousin.
I'm sure my wife would be laughing too.
sorry, Ken.
I need 5 minutes.
Sorry, Ken. I didn't mean to take the show R-rated.
Yeah. No, fine. Oh, Lordy. Okay, that's the series.
That's good, because the next show is Ken's, and he won't be able to say much.
This was great.
This was great on many levels. For a start, he turned 8. I released it because he turned 8 on his birthday. So I released it for his birthday. But you have to remember, Dutch is his first language. English is his second language. So he just came on and then spoke in English about what he was doing. I'm so proud of him.
Oh, yeah, that was no problem whatsoever. I was actually really impressed that he could speak so freely and fluently. But the idea of you know, running your pie that way, that was, I loved this show. This was fantastic. This might be my favorite use for a Raspberry Pi that I've heard actually done so far.
Well, they've actually, with the camera module, which they come out with, they have released a little program to control it, and it does all this and more. You can, you know, for slow motion, for professional HD time-lapse stuff, this is using a Raspberry Pi is the way to go now. They've developed their own program. You can set the saturation, the blah, the blah, the blah, the blah. But this is kind of handy, you know, you got any cheap old webcam and you can do this sort of stuff.
No, I love this episode. I am curious to ask whether this was the actual filming of it was your idea or your son's.
Well, it's kind of
team effort?
No, he knew he'd have to wait 8 days, so I said, well, we have, they're used to the concept of having a camera. A little rewind back. We have like a camera that we use for taking rear photos, but we got a ruggedized HD zoom Kodak camera for them. It's not my wife and I's camera. It's their camera. You can drop it, you can put it in the water, but we tell them it's not a toy. So they're used to taking photos of stuff. So if they build a complicated train set or something, then we'll say, okay, you've got it, you can leave it here for today and tomorrow, but then we have to clean it up. And before they clean it up, they take photos of it and videos of it. And he goes and tells the story. So they're used to the concept of taking pictures. And we've done lots of time-lapse stuff with, cartoon stuff where we have a little train go up the wall and stuff. We put it on with blue tech to the wall and then take a picture and then put it up again and take a picture and then animate it. So we've done lots of those things.
Oh, that is just wonderful.
And magic shows as well. Like my daughter did all, you know, the house is a mess, and then abracadabra. And then we freeze it. I go tidy the kitchen and everything, and then she put her back in the same place, and then boom, and then it's, you know, the house is clean.
No, that's fabulous. I have 8-year-old twin boys, and anytime they want to get into this real creative stuff, my son, one of them built a makeshift drum set out of pots and pans and bowls and things, and it's just wonderful to see that creativity. So I always try to encourage it.
Yeah, it's cool. The fact that what really helps is, you know, the 8 days, somebody gives a present, it's going to take 8 days for the thing to hatch, which is like forever if you're 7 years old. So having been able to go and then, it hasn't done anything, and then you look at all the photos and you see that it is moving and it is growing and stuff, it is, you know, it takes the edge off that a bit.
No, this is great. I 100% approve of the idea, how you went about it, getting your kids involved. I love getting families involved in this stuff. It's terrific. Talk about getting your kids involved in stuff. It reminds me of the time we built a hovercraft just to show the kids what that was about.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really simple. It was a little wooden disc, and you hook the vacuum cleaner up on blow, and it, you know, it's a hovercraft. But, you know, yours, I don't know, filming this and doing the stop motion animation seems like it would be harder than what I did. I'm well impressed. We'll just say that.
No, that's. I think they're. They get scared a lot with. I think they think too much sometimes. They get scared with a lot of stuff that they see, and then if you can explain to them how they did it and they can do it themselves on the camera, then it takes a lot of the fear away from some of the stuff that they see on TV. Not that, you know, I mean, we control what they see on TV and everything, but. Okay, moving on. 1345, LibreOffice, Writer List Styles introduced.
I need to catch up on these and start listening in, because I got to help my daughter with some school reports. And I keep going, boy, I wish I'd paid more attention and sat in front of my computer listening to them. So I think I'm going to have to start from the beginning again.
You're welcome to do that, Pokey, but I also have pretty much all of this stuff written up on my website with screenshots and things.
I still need to link those in, Hookah, so the reason they're not linked in is my fault, but it's on my list.
Yeah, it's ahookah.com, so it should be able to find it fairly easily.
Well, the link to the website is there, so on the show notes to all of these, you will find that link, but I think there's better. You sent me a list of better links.
You asked for it.
Yeah, I did. I just didn't get time to do it because I'm fighting the NS at the moment, which is our train company.
No, I think actually listening to the shows and sitting in front of the computer and doing what you say is going to work better for me. And it's a learning style that a friend of mine introduced me to when I was trying to teach him about computers, where I would sit there at the computer and you know, show him, you click here, you do this, you do that. And he said, you know what, just get the hell out of my way. He said, I can't see what you're doing. I don't know what you're talking about. None of your words sound like English to me right now. He said, so let me sit there and you tell me what to do and I'll figure it out at my speed and this will work better for us. And that seems to work for me. And that you know, I think is the way to go about it for some people. And that's what you've done here. And I really appreciate it. And I think that's the way I'm going to do it.
Well, thank you.
Again, required. And I will say from my own point of view, we got one of my places of employment, we got a 2-week training in Office, which I, at the time, way back, and it went through how to use styles properly and all this. So all this stuff is more rehearsing or repetition. What?
Review.
Review.
Thank you. My brain, such as it is now shut down.
But oh yeah, but there's
investing that time is there's a massive benefit if you start thinking about your document as separating the format from the data from the presentations. That is key. So do learn this series, folks. Stop sending me crap Word documents.
Oh yeah, and for sure, if you listen to all the episodes in this series and you get good on with LibreOffice and with Office programs, you know, when your company comes around and says, here's a 2-week course we want you to take, you can sleep right through it. 2 weeks of nap is really nothing to scoff at.
Yep, get paid for it. Okay, and the last show of the month even. Was
and a really good one.
Yes, and a first-time contributor, Riley Gelwix, is that right?
Gelwix.
Riley. Riley is a second name. Where I come from, Riley is a second name.
Yeah, well.
Anyways.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yes, no, I've already commented on this episode. Brilliant, brilliant episode. Basically, what to do, not to be, like, don't be a jerk. Excellent.
But yeah. I've generally found that if you tell people they're stupid, they stop listening to you.
No.
Yeah, I know. It's hard
to believe. I do it all the time.
I'm going to try to implement that. I'll see how that goes your way.
I did put in some comments about in the feedback, but it was more about the proprietary formats that free as in freedom. Is a valid argument to use when we're talking about somebody's got the latest version of Word and it doesn't open in this version of Word that on a PC that they bought 6 months ago, and then I feel that is a good time to introduce them to the concept of software freedom and open formats and that sort of thing.
It really does depend on who you're talking to,
and that's the point he was making.
Yeah, exactly. Free as in freedom works great with a libertarian type. You know, whereas it might not work so good with a get things done kind of a person.
Yep.
I was talking at my Linux users group once, and I made the comment that 99% of people who use software have no interest in ever even looking at the source code. I thought I was not going to get out of the room alive.
No, it's true. You take the analogy of a motor vehicle. How many people, you know, will open the car and replace the oil or replace the oil filter, which at least used to be a relatively simple thing to do.
Well, that did come up, Ken. One guy practically yelled at me, you wouldn't buy a car if the hood was welded shut.
Yeah, well, okay. On the other hand, a colleague in work brought his car down to the garage to replace a front bulb. Admittedly, they were doing it for free, so yeah, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that works with some people for sure. There are people who wouldn't buy a car with the hood welded shut. There are a whole, but I would argue that a majority of people would rather buy the car with the hood welded shut. Like, I'm not expected to do anything under there, and I don't want to. I'll bring it in for service when it needs it, and you people can figure out how to get at the workings. So it just depends on who you're talking to.
Yep.
But the ability to do so is certainly advantageous, no matter who you're talking to, because even the person who would rather never open the hood certainly would appreciate that their corner garage can when the cost at the dealership gets to be too great.
Yes, exactly. I think Stephen Price said it very well in that anniversary episode, anniversary video he did for Free Software Foundation about and the analogy of the plumbing in the house. The plumbing's in my house. I know it's there. I never, ever want to use it, but when it goes wrong, I want to be able to call up somebody and know that they can fix it.
Yeah, and I think really Riley's point was just if you are trying to encourage someone to try Linux for the first time, that may not be your strongest argument.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
I think there's a good argument to be made that you attract people with what they're interested in, and then once you've sucked them in, you can expose them to some of the other fine features.
You know what's, oh, by the way, I've never said this before, I don't think. I went down to the local library and got, and asked them about magazine subscriptions for Linux, and they got the Dutch Linux magazine, they put it on the stand, and then they put in a form in on it. Do people find this interesting, yes or no? And a few people did, and now it's there every week. And every month I go in to check and make sure that it's, you know, probably dog-eared and stuff. And it has been read. The thing is frayed apart. So, sorry, the reason I'm bringing this up is promoting Linux. That's one way. The other way that I've promoted Linux has been to have a stack of Raspberry Pis and just to loan them out to people. But the best way to, and Riley put his finger on this, is just to use it in work. Not shove it down people's throats, but just go, can somebody get this for me? You do yabba-da yabba-da-ya, you pipe it to said awk grep, and you have the answer for them. That's the most powerful thing.
What was the, it might have been only an online magazine, I'm not sure, but the one that put Hacker Public Radio on as the great Linux podcast?
Linux Format. That's a UK magazine from the Tux Radar folks.
Oh, right on. Okay. You got to sneak that onto their shelf.
What my hobby is to go into newsagents and take the Linux magazines from the back stand and put them on the front.
Right on. Well, if you can find a copy of that one, the hard copy, just stick that one on the rack at the library, I mean.
No, we have that. I have that here. I'm not losing that. I had to track down that. It was very expensive here.
Okay. Expensive everywhere.
I think that was about it for
the shows.
So moving not so quickly, an hour and 12 minutes. Some updated stats. So we've been running for 7 years, 6 months, 22 days as of time of recording. We're running as HPR 5 years, 3 months, 29 days. Total number of shows is 16,085.
1,600.
Divided by 10.
Yes. 1,600, alas. 1,685. 202 HPR hosts. There are... Next free slot is in 13 days as of recording. There are 9 hosts in the queue, and there are 12 shows in the queue. Last month's download figures were... Wait for it. 75,774. All that information is available in is zip RNA BZ2.
That's everything. There is just astonishing to me. The number, especially the total number of shows and the number of downloads. Those are astonishing numbers.
We talked about that last month, and then I had a chance to chat with Dan Washko about it. That the average last month, at any rate, I haven't gone into this month. The average show had 2,600 downloads. And Dan and I were chatting about, you get the feeling sometimes, well, I interact with maybe 20 people total.
Yeah.
The shows I do. And so I think, you know, I'm just doing this for a few friends. And it's, no, on average, you're doing this for 2,600 people. That's an interesting thought.
That's an average of 3,608 downloads per show.
Oh, that's okay.
Yep. Because... yeah, it goes up and it goes down, and the longer your show is in the queue, the more hits it's going to get. All the stats are there in the report of however you want to mash it. If there's somebody good with charts and stuff, you can get the raw data there. I'm not hiding it from anybody.
Yeah, it's just it's fascinating, and it feels, like you were just saying, you feel like it's a small community because there's only 20 or so people, you know, discussing things on the news, on the mailing list, or, you know, who pop into other podcasts, or, you know, in real life, but that many people, it's astonishing being part of something so big. And I mean, I got to assume it's so well loved. How often do you hear a negative comment?
Well, I guess we do encourage people, if you don't like it, delete it, move on to the next show. There's always going to be something, you know.
And that's
the
most negative.
Some of the people some of the time, more of the people more of the time, but not all of the people all of the time. That's just being realistic. But
yeah, and that's the most negative thing I've ever heard said about HPR.
Yeah, but I'm saying it. That's the negative thing I've heard about HPR is just the flood of shows that come in. So what I'm saying to people is, if you don't like them, delete them and move on.
Oh, no. I disagree, because I have twice in as many months now, I've gotten so backed up on every podcast, but including HPR, where, you know, I'd be 2 or 3 weeks behind on them, and then the flood of shows hit me. And take my advice here, just bathe in it. They're so great to hear them one after the other after the other. And it's just good show after good show. It's overwhelming, and it's really great.
Cool. Okay, that's the report. I still think it's amazing, like, that for every show, you're talking to more people than, you know, the biggest room of any Linux Fest or any Hacker Fest ever, you know. Anyway, last month, I didn't remove that. Oh, yes, the bad news. Talk Geek to Me as a general newscast is now open. Got an email from Deep Geek, and he published Talk Geek to Me News number 103 in. And he just missed last month's community news, unfortunately. So it's only now that the message is getting out. And the message still won't be getting out for another month because of the delay that we have in the first come, first served queuing system, which I want to talk to you about now in a minute. And with your permission, I know the show will get a bit long, but I'd like to put that audio in after this show. Tag it on.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I'm sad to see it go, and this is the second time I felt this, because we thought it was going to die once before, which is when Deep Geek, put out the call for help, and, you know, I was one of the people who jumped up to help that, because I do like Talk Geek to Me News. I love it, and it's I'm sad to see it end as a podcast, but on the upside, he is going to continue to do the tech-only version of it for Hacker Public Radio once a month. So there is a silver lining to the cloud there.
Yeah, I got quite a lot of my alternative news from Deep Geek there.
Mm-hmm. I think he explained, you know, the reason is that his job is just taking up a lot more of his time. And anyone who's ever listened to that knows that there's a hell of a lot of research that he puts into it to find those stories and source them and all of that. So it's understandable that if he's short of time, he's got to make some adjustments.
I think I'd like to get his RSS list.
Probably. Yeah.
Well, he mentions, and listeners will hear it in the part that you tack in there, Ken. He mentions how it was taking him like 4 hours every Saturday to compile these things. And I'm astonished that he could do it so quickly. I have a hard time believing that's the full number of time that he put into that.
Okay. Well, yes. Everything must come to an end. And I'm sad to see this one go. It was one of my... I needed to be in a proper frame of mind to listen to it. It wasn't something I would listen to first thing in the morning, but it was definitely something that wouldn't be waiting around very long in my queue.
Yeah, same here. I always kind of had to listen to it in the afternoon.
Yes, but that said, he's not going anywhere, so that's good news. Okay, so some lighter stuff on the mailing list and just general mails to the admins. We had the Is This Spam or Not? And I don't know if a lot of people know that you can put comments on the website, which is one of the things I want to get rid of as soon as possible. I'm not commenting, obviously, don't go freaking out, but doing the commenting in another way, that because the commenting system that's there is a bit old, and I've been trying to talk to the guy to get a newer version, but it's not exactly the way I want it to go, but there are comments, so people do occasionally make comments, and sometimes, most of the time, that comment is spam.
I'm seeing the same thing. I've got several websites of my own that I manage, and I'd say the ratio is about 20 or 30 to 1 between spam and actual comments, and that's just the stuff that gets through the filter that I've already got on there.
Yeah, exactly. This guy was pretty good because he had at least read the show, you know, and was going, oh, this is brilliant, the Switzerland keyboard that really helped me out. And dude, you know, look at the link for, and then there's a link in the, you know, to his whatever thing he's selling. So you have to admire the guy, whoever it was.
An arms race.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a human. There was no way this could be automated. This was some human being paid to do it.
I don't know. The spam is a real bummer because, you know, right on the web page, that's my favorite place to get comments on my episodes. I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but yeah, that's certainly the way I feel about it. I've always been a big proponent of the comments.
I will bear that in mind. Then there was a mumble HPR meeting about banner stickers, HPR tables at Dance Like Linux Fest. Did that go ahead?
Yeah, it happened. It was recorded, and it should be posted as a show at some point. I didn't do the recording of that myself, but I was there. There were two of us.
Was it good?
In pajamas.
Super.
It was good. I enjoyed it. I don't know if we, you know, nailed everything down, but we got some decisions made, I think.
Cool. Sorry I couldn't make it. Awkward time for me.
Yeah, no problem. It's basic thing is that, you know, I have to accept responsibility for losing the banner, the beautiful banner that that got made up for HPR.
Yes,
it's all my fault. I shipped it to the wrong address.
Do you have any idea what the wrong address was?
I shipped it to his old house, and I don't know, maybe I just didn't see that he had changed his address and he had moved, but the people who bought his house have a nice HPR banner now, I guess, and he tried contacting them about it and never got any response from them, and it stinks, but so I'm going to replace the banner, and on the upside, we found a I don't know if I'll say a better stand, but certainly a lighter one, because that banner cost a fortune to ship. But with the lighter stand, we should be able to ship it back and forth pretty inexpensively.
Yeah, I just shipped the European one over to the UK, and I was thinking, you know, it was nearly half the price of the thing itself to ship it to the UK. It might have made more sense to just buy one for the UK and then have one here.
Yeah. Well, we found a stand that's made out of aluminum tubing, and it's like $11 on Amazon. So, and it weighs like a pound and a half, maybe, as compared to the other one, was probably 8 or 10 pounds for the steel base.
Aluminium, no doubt. Anyways,
aluminium for our even aluminium. More foreign audiences.
There was a request. Help with medical units. If anyone knows about what type of units are used for medical dosages, they should get in touch with
Charles Thayer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, isn't he the one that's been doing the math series?
Correct, yes, that's him.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce people's names. I thought this was a running theme. You people should know this by now. There was a fix for the HPR calendar page that didn't render correctly, so thanks for sending that in. And then there was, I have a topic here about nutters. Can anyone remember what that was?
I think that was on the topic of possibly archiving the mailing list to Gmail.
Ah, yes. Ah, yes, which I need to do. But I can't make that decision because the HPR community news from last month, where we discussed this, hasn't been released yet, and I've got no feedback. Yes. Which I'll bring up is, should we return to the reserved slot? During this month also, or coming month, I can't remember, one of the episodes, there was a problem with the audio. The audio was sent in, and when I transcoded, no fault of the person, and I'm not bringing this up to bring out any fault, despite what were sarcastic remarks at the beginning about us grading episodes. Nobody grades episodes except the host, because I think, for me, that's you tend to be the most critical about your own shows. And if anything, where people have been overly supportive about some of the crappy shows that I put on. But anyway, getting back to the point, which I've now forgotten. When that went out, there was audio silence. And now because we have an RSS feed that's in the future, people might have received that. So I used a trick that we had in the database to set the... to shows to valid or not. I have no idea why it's in the database there, but a lot of the queries, it'll stop it going into the RSS feed if it's set to zero. So then Dave Morris, who has dropped off, I think bad connection, mentioned that it was still coming up on the calendar page. So then I put in a thing on the calendar page to say it was unavailable, was the word. And then I was thinking, well, therefore we could put in a reservation system there where there was no audio, but we could reserve the show, which means we could put in a reservation at the beginning of the month or next month or whatever for community news, so that community news would be coming out on time, or any other significant events that would be deemed worthy of that by the HPR Parliament, which is the mailing list.
I suppose you want to discuss that on the mailing list.
That too, yeah, but also.
But my initial reaction is first come, first served is a whole lot less work.
Yeah, my first thought about it, I usually keep quiet on these things because I don't help implement them. So my first thought as well, if you think that's easy enough to do, go for it.
I mean, the code is now implemented by the simple fact that occasionally we're going to have problems where, you know, I notice the audio or something is incorrect, and I'll have to freeze the show so it's not going down to people. So that's kind of there. But there are other times where during the year where we might want to reserve a particular date, for example.
Yeah, I think if somebody is willing to commit to something that far ahead, I don't see a problem with that, as long as people come through with their shows and you know, don't miss it. Maybe we could, I don't know. Now I'm going to overcomplicate it, so I'll just stop.
Well, here's what I was thinking, was the community news is always coming out every month. I mean, it always is. We have backup shows. If the shows don't turn up, we'll just simply put the backup shows in. And if somebody requests that particular day, that overrules the reservation, basically.
That's not really all that different from what we had, because when we switched over to first come, first serve, you still could request a specific episode number out into the future. So you're just saying now it's a date that the system turns into that show number.
Yeah, well, you can still post a show anytime, but you need to have a physical audio file available to you to attach to that. So, for example, if you wanted to record, the first man landing on Mars, and you wanted to release a special episode on the day they were the first woman, let's say, landing on Mars, and you wanted to do that the day they arrived, you would need to have the audio ready prior to that event in the queue and queued up, so that people could download the MP3 or the audio files that's associated with that in the future RSS feed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So the suggestion would be to create sort of a tentative reserved date for shows that do not yet have the audio completed.
Correct, yeah. So it wouldn't be in the feed because there's no show recorded as yet, but we're putting a kind of post-it beside it to say, hey guys, if nobody minds, I'd like to use this day.
You know, Ken, you can do it if you want, but it strikes me that we're going back down the road that led to a horrendously complicated system.
Yeah,
previously.
I know, but then I'm also looking at this from our community news point of view. We're 3 months behind. When we normally do a community news, we're a month behind anyway. And then by the time people get to listen to it, it's even when it was coming out on the first of the month, I quite often would only get feedback 2 or 3 weeks later. So then for the decision-making arm of the show, where there are topics that are of interest to the community, and the community not just limited to the people who bothered to join the mailing list, something significant like putting the mailing list out into the public, that is something that everybody who listens to this show needs to be aware of, because there were people on the mailing list previous to that who are now no longer on the mailing list, and those people's voices need to be heard, or at least they need to be given an opportunity to be able to give a comment on that. So now that decision has been recorded a month ago. It'll be released during this week, and then there'll be no comments back on that for at least another 3 or 4 weeks. So or, you know, comments will be coming back. And this is on the discussion that we've already had on the mailing list now up to 3 months ago. So I think the delay is kind of unacceptable from that point of view.
Yeah, that specific use case certainly does make a strong enough argument for having the reserve slots. It sounds like maybe what Ahuka was saying about it leading down the wrong road could be cut off by just saying, okay, we only do it for the community news. But then, you know, the question is that fair? Is that what we want to do?
Yeah, and then we have, since we did this, we haven't, I spoke to DeepGeek about, okay, would this be something, are you stopping the show because of the fact that we're not putting your show out on a regular basis? And he said, no, it was because of the work. But he found it interesting that I'd ask. But if he was doing a regular new show and it's a once a month deal, then yeah, maybe we should have a slot for that. And then you go back to maybe Dan should have his Tuesday slot as well. Well, Dan, not so much, because if Dan starts putting the shows into the queue, he can, they're there and they're available, you know, and he can link to them and they come out on a particular day. But that said, since we stopped doing that, and I know his life got, since we switched, we haven't had a Linux in the Shell episode. And I'm a bit worried that it might be because he hasn't felt the pressure that, oh, there's a slot coming up. You know what I mean?
Well, I talked to him. And that wasn't, he didn't say anything of the sort about that. It was like a lot of us, he just, you know, he's got a growing family, just had another child recently, and summer and family activities and all of that. And he said, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to get back and start recording some more shows when things settle down. You know, that's the way he explained it to me.
Yeah. Okay. So for Dan's show, I think, yeah, the normal queue would work. For community news, I really am being a bit frustrated because we need to start planning for stuff like the upcoming, if we're planning on doing the December, 24-hour thing. And
better New Year's Eve show.
You know, the New Year's Eve show, if we're starting planning for that, then people kind of need to be hearing about it in the community news coming up to that event.
Sure.
Yeah, you got a point.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, Ken. I'm just, my sense is we got into a situation before where it was very complicated and it was all falling on you. And over the, you know, over a 2-year period, it seemed every other month it was, well, I've thought about it some more. That didn't quite work. Let's jigger it a little bit this way and we'll make this little change. And then a couple of months later, it's still not quite right. Let's do this other change. And it seemed like it was creating a lot of work for you, frankly.
Yeah, and it was. And what was worse was that nobody was understanding the queue. This, I think, the first-in, first-out system, people posting themselves, is really a godsend as far as the amount of work I've had to do in it. Everything, a lot of the stuff is automated. Shows just come out. People have the choice of when they do their days. So all I'm thinking of doing with this is in the drop-down list, the first Monday of the month is just kind of excluded from the drop-down list. If you put it in your text file that you want that date, then it'll come out on that date. I might email you to go, well, you know, that's kind of the community news, but if you want to do it, then you do it, yeah.
All right.
I think that makes sense to me. And as in terms of fairness, I think the only place, or the point at which we're going to start to run into issues of fairness, is where we have reserved shows that occur more frequently than the average queue length, which I don't think we're in danger of that with the community news by any means.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a good bit of analysis. I was trying to put my finger on what that might be, but I think you nailed it.
And I think one thing that that has happened with the graphs and stuff of, you know, when the shows are coming in and going out, people are getting a lot more transparency actually on what's going on. That's my homepage now. I hit that in the morning just to see what's going out. Which, let's talk about it right now. There are 13 days to wait until the next queue, and what you see is a very much a shark fin type way it operates. We tend to get a burst of shows and then it drops off. get another one, drops off, drops off, gets off, yeah. Another one. So it's gone down from a massive peak after the summer, where we got a lot of shows in, to what I would say was a bit of a. I'm not actually worried as yet, because this tends to happen, and then over the autumn period, fall period, I suppose you guys would say, if people are recording their second show for, you know, that quarter, there are plenty of slots. You don't have to wait too long. It's a 2-week lead time right now.
When you brought up lag, it made me think of one thing, and I don't mean to derail anything, but on the mailing list, we discussed the April 1st show for next year, and people said they wanted to participate in that, and I was going to coordinate those submissions. I haven't got any of those yet, and considering the lag time as to when this particular recording is going to be posted, it'll probably be pretty close to that deadline. For me to get all those things so I can still get them edited. So if you were going to participate in that, if you're on the mailing list and know what I'm talking about, please get me that file, do that and get that record, do your bit of recording and get me that file, please.
Roger.
I'll see if I can get that done this weekend. Okay, I did not forget it. I promise you.
Nor did I.
No, I don't think anybody forgot it. I just, you know, and the deadline isn't looming as of the day that we're recording this, but it may be a lot closer to looming as of the day that this gets aired. So just a reminder to people.
Exactly. So are we doing a New Year's show?
Yeah, hell yes.
I'd still like to, yeah.
I've always looked forward to it.
I was looking through the logs and I was wondering what the average was, and the peak download around there is about 4 times the normal for any particular show. It's massively peaks download.
Around. Wow.
Well, I think it's just always kind of a very enjoyable show, just for the sheer breadth of the topics and just a chance to hear the hosts that you grow to love over the year interacting with one another.
Breadth of topics. All they talked about was feckin' food from food. One of the days and another. Food, 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 food. This type of food, that type of food.
Yeah, I was going to say, this last year, there seemed to be only 4 topics and we just went around and around to them.
Oh, God. What was the fellow who was drunk kept bringing up the same thing over and over?
2 windows in Nautilus.
Thank you. That was hilarious, actually.
I think that's the real draw of the New Year's Eve show.
Yeah.
Do you really want seeing someone go off like that?
He wasn't that bad, in fairness. Come on.
What we're learning here is Ken gets worse on a regular basis.
I have been that soldier, I must say.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been that guy too. I did it once on another podcast, and I listened back to it, and I was so embarrassed, I swore I wouldn't do it anymore.
Yes, and I heard that podcast, and I found it very enjoyable.
Gee, thanks.
Anyway. Yes.
Can I take a moment here to talk about some plans I have? First of all, the LibreOffice series is going to continue. This could continue for several years. All right. What I plan to do is I want to talk about page layout, and then as part of that, get into frame styles and page styles. And at that point, I'm going to temporarily drop Writer and move on to Calc, because there's a ton of stuff there, and I know some people have been waiting for that to come around.
Woohoo! Spreadsheets!
It's a useful tool. But the other thing, aside from one or two one-offs that I'm probably just going to record and throw up there, I want to start a different series that wouldn't be just me, but here's what I'm thinking. Ken was talking to me last month about encrypting email, and it, you know how Ken is. You talk about anything, and he says, you should do a show on that. So I started thinking about it, and I've got some ideas, and I'm getting together with some folks from the Sunday Morning Linux Review who also were interested in this, and so we're working on trying to get some people going and figuring out how all of this stuff works. So I want to start something. I don't know if you call it security or privacy or, you know, I did a scan through the series names. I did not see encryption, privacy, or security in my quick scan of titles, as series titles anyway.
It sounds like something you might want to start off as like a Saturday session, because I don't think we've had a Saturday session in a while, but those were terrific. You know, you come in there with a planned topic and, you know, one or two interested people would show up, and then maybe another one or two people who just want to be part of the community show up. And that sounds like that kind of thing.
It can also be that, I think.
It could. Then it becomes a schedule thing of whether I can do those Saturdays. But, you know, I'm doing one a month now for the community news, so it's probably doable. But, you know, I was thinking that it would be nice to have a kind of a structured, you know, like I do with the LibreOffice, to, you know, step by step, here's how you think about it, here's how these things work. I would think that I would be aiming at least at people who are not experts that need a little bit of hand-holding through it. But I'd like to get other people involved because I don't know all of this stuff. There's some things I do know and some things I'm learning, but there's a lot of smart people in the HPR community that could contribute shows to this.
I have been thinking about this topic, doing something similar myself. I have the outline of at least two, if not three shows, two of which are technical and one of which is, in fact, the actual reverse of being technical. And I would very much like to add them to this series. So when you come up with a name, give me a shout.
Okay.
And I have a show request too. I did a show, I don't know, it feels like a while back now that I did it, an intro to editing the OpenStreetMap using Potlatch was their online editor. And,
oh, it's great.
Oh, thank you. They've since added a new editor. It's now their default and the one they're suggesting. I forget what it's called, but I was gonna do another show on their new editor, but I have used the editor. I can't use it. I can't stand it. I can't take it. So I'm not the guy to do the next episode in that series of OpenStreetMap editing, because I just can't stand their new editor. So if anyone does use that editor and likes it and feels they could do a show on it, I, for one, would appreciate it, at least just to keep it going. I think I'm going to stick with the old editor as long as I can, but just for the community, I think it would be as beneficial, if not more beneficial, than the show that I did, but I'm not the guy who can do it.
Two things about that is, one, yes, can you remember to email me a reminder, otherwise I will completely forget to put this in the show notes. And secondly, can you please do a screencast of your episode?
Oh, I don't know. I think a screencast would ruin it. I think it was more about the people doing it on their own, but okay, I'll see what I can do.
Well, just a few screenshots or something would help me, because I'm a bit silly that way.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Okay, other things, we have the audio quality manifesto again. Again, refers to, yeah, nobody is grading your shows. If a lot of people are saying record in Audacity or record in whatever, to be honest, I found the easiest thing to do myself was just record on a separate device. I normally record on my Zoom H2, which is a really nice piece of kit that I invested in, but you can record on your mobile phone, on a Sansa clip, or any external device, and then you have a WAV file, and then you can bring that into Audacity and do whatever you need to do. So keep it simple as well. I think what Dor was talking about was doing complicated double enders and trying to improve the audio quality of tilts, which, yeah, I think Push to Talk would probably do an awful lot for the audio quality of tilts, in my own opinion. But if you're interested and you have a topic here on HPR, please pick up the crappiest speaker that you have in your house. No, pick up the best speaker you have, or best microphone you have in your house. Always try to strive for the best audio quality that you can get, but I prefer you to record the moment rather than, you know, procrastinating for days and days and days and never ending up sending in a show because you don't have the precise microphone that's going to make you sound perfect. Yeah.
I can see that caption under my own picture.
Yes, I believe you can. I think it was from you that I learned the word procrastination.
That may well be. I'm sorry about that, folks.
Okay, the other thing is, there is no rule of thumb about using bedding music. Don't use bedding music. here, you're free to edit the shows as you like, with no preference from anybody at all. Don't use bedding music. But if you are going to use music in your podcast, make sure that you have written permission to do so, or the license is a Creative Commons license. Okay.
Yeah, just
I'm not
just
saying.
No.
I'm just moving on from that whole topic.
Well, so, I will say that if you use bedding music, that's your own decision to do so artistically, and you know, I think everybody understands that and respects that. But keep in mind that you're definitely going to lose listeners by using it, because a lot of people listen to the episodes at high speed and the music doesn't sound right and it's too abrasive and they just won't listen to that episode. There's also other people who have hearing impairments who can't decipher your words through the music. It's just too muddy for someone with a hearing impairment. And those are the two comments that I've heard people say. So I can you know, say with a certainty you will lose at least those two categories of listeners, and it makes me think you will have more listeners if you don't use music. But it is still an artistic choice, and you know, that's totally up to you, and more freedom and more power to you.
It also completely breaks things for people who are trying to programmatically decipher your Morse code.
Yeah, if you put bedding music behind Morse code, you're just a bastard.
That said, I'm not pointing the finger at anybody. There have been several people who have done it right. And by the way, remember as well that your audio will be edited and monoized, and we will try to normalize the audio and all that sort of high tech.
Not edited. Stuff. Just transcoded.
Sorry, transcoded. We will not edit it. Well, yeah, we normalized the audio, and I think we had a remove silence thing, but no, maybe I've taken that out. Thank you for that point. We don't edit the shows. We don't review the shows. They go out as is. We process the audio. That's the word I was trying to use. We do process the audio. If you want your audio coming out in where you're actually playing music, or want stereo for any reason, then be sure to put that into the show notes or contact me directly. And that's perfectly allowed as well.
All right.
And one last thing is, if you're uploading stuff to the FTP server, don't dump it into the home directory, all your files. If there are multiple files, put it into a zip file in the home directory. Just use A to Z, upper, lowercase, and 0 or 9. Don't use commas, spaces, whatever. It just annoys me. Thank you. And date right. Formats are ISO 8601. Thank you very much. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of...
Hacker
Public Radio.
Join us now and share the software. You be free, hackers. You be free.
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free. Hoarders can get piles of money, that is true, hackers, that is true. But they cannot help their neighbors, that's not good, hackers, that's not good. When we have enough free software at our call, hackers at our call, we'll kick out those dirty licenses evermore. us now and share the software. You'll be free hackers, you'll be free. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free hackers, you'll be free.
This is Deep Geek. Welcome to Talk Geek to Me, a voice of the resistance. You are listening to TGTM News number 103, record for Sunday, September the 8th, 2013. Here are the vital statistics for this program. Your feedback matters to me. Please send your comments to dg@deepgeek.us. The webpage for this program is at www.talkgeektome.us. You can subscribe to me on Identica as the username DeepGeek, or you could follow me on Twitter. My username there is DGTGTM, as in Deep Geek, Talk Geek to Me.
Hey, it's Deep Geek, and this is a special show. Why? Because the time has come to close TGTM News as a general newscast. Yes, change is the only constant in this world, and sometimes that involves moving on. But if you consider yourself a fan of TGTM News, don't fret. I will still be podcasting. I'm not going away. Marshall McLuhan once said, the medium is the message. In terms of podcasting, that means you want to be heard. I'm not making a retirement announcement, but my life has recently changed, and it impacts you, dear listener, insofar as this show goes. A few months ago, there were some changes at my day job. These include more weekend hours and more travel. Free time is now in short supply, but more on that later. Let's do this in a logical order. Let's examine why I started this newscast, how I put it together, why I did it for so long, and why it is now time to end it. After that, I'll tell you about the show's new format going into the future. All my life, I knew there was something wrong with American media, something myopic about it. When I was a teenager, a neighbor named Greg Durso taught me how to use a shortwave radio to get the news. Throughout my 20s, I learned to combat media bias by taking in a variety of sources in order to find some balance. You see, you can't know what's going on without hearing multiple sides to an issue. In the old days, that meant finding perspectives from different countries, using the media services and sources available. The internet makes this search easier and more comprehensive today, but back then it was difficult. Several right-wing initiatives from the Reagan administration led to narrowing viewpoints within our U.S. news media. 3 years ago, I came to realize that the amount of effort I put into keeping myself informed could not reasonably be expected of all my fellow citizens. I therefore embarked on a form of journalism where I would take the news of others and make a selection for my own listeners. The idea was not to replace traditional news, but rather to make a compendium of alternate news so as to supplement traditional news sources, to be that other perspective. I sought via shortwave international radio as a child. Reading and recording the audio presentation of stories was very rewarding, but better content always came from increasing the total amount of news stories scanned, giving it a more cream-of-the-crop aspect. Eventually, it would take me about 4 hours to do this process per episode, and this is the reason why work now conflicts with TGTM News. In the end, my choices were either to lower the quality of the show, quit working, or stop the project entirely. I think that stopping is the right choice. TGTM News always had a small following, which is something I did not expect. I eventually understood that many people were attached to what Robert Anton Wilson called a reality tunnel. This means that many people only want reinforcement of what they already think. Reality is not an objective thing. In a sense, it is plastic, and for many people, getting along means thinking like others. They simply won't process any viewpoint contrary to the mainstream. Don't confuse this with people saying that they are independent. For many, this is just another example of the same kind of reinforcement. They find others who self-identify in this way and reject challenging viewpoints in the same manner as the wider majority. It takes a certain kind of person to be truly independent, and that doesn't involve avoiding challenging viewpoints. In this sense, TGTM News impacted hundreds of listeners in a profound way. I bring this up to make a broader statement about truth. People who actually wanted to know what was going on found out that they were not alone. They discovered this while they listened to TGTM on their earbuds in a cubicle or on a car audio player or while shoveling snow. They heard alternate viewpoints and knew that others out there were passionate about the truth, and they came to know their own view of it a bit better by being exposed to challenging viewpoints. So why did I keep it up for so long? When the effort involved in putting a show together became greater and greater? Mainly because of people like you, dear listener. Your downloads revealed that there are others out there like me, passionate for the truth. Oh, there were additional benefits of doing the show, of course. Argumentative people in my everyday life who got their views exclusively from TV or radio could not hold a candle to me after I read all those differing viewpoints. I also got to meet and talk with an amazing variety of people through my reputation as the ultra-indie news geek. I consider myself blessed by the interviews I conducted, but I consider myself particularly blessed to have interviewed two people I consider so significant to TGTM News, Maggie McNeil and Birgitta Hahnstuttier. Finding all the news required for the show was a part-time job in and of itself. I hit the wall of time before, and three special podcasters came to the rescue, Dan Washko, Bobo Bex, and Pokey. You might think that their recording of the tech portions of the show were small efforts, but it saved me vital hours of recording and editing every week. I owe them a special thanks as partners on the TGTM News team, just as I owe thanks to all the others who made it possible. The people who wrote the articles I read, who published them, and gave me permission to use them in one way or another. Those whom I've interviewed, those who've recorded bumpers or let me bounce ideas off of them, TGTM News comes to a rest as a true group effort, one I will always be proud of. And always remember that what I did need not be unique. You can do it too. Just challenge your perspectives. TV and radio, Republican and Democrats, they are all owned by the 1%. Seek out something different to add to that multi-headed but ultimately singular perspective, and you will have a better understanding of the world. I will continue podcasting, rest assured. Starting next month, I will be doing one tech show per week for Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. As for my own site, I will maintain my relationship with you, dear listeners, with a monthly opinion piece or by bringing you an interview. That will be the new Talk Geek to Me. I hope you continue to invite me into your ears and minds in the future, albeit less often. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Geek to Me. Here are the vital statistics for this program. Your feedback matters to me. Please send your comments to dg@deepgeek.us. The webpage for this program is at www.talkgeektome.us. You can subscribe to me on Identica as the username DeepGeek, or you could follow me on Twitter. My username there is DGTGTM, as in Deep Geek, Talk Geek to Me.
This episode of Talk Geek to Me is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. This license allows commercial reuse of the work, as well as allowing you to modify the work, so long as you share alike the same rights you have received under this license.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Geek to Me.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.